Welcome to this week's episode of the Handyman Hotline. Today we're discussing all things out with the old and in with the new about HVACs and humidifiers. What are them and why do we need them? And then we're going to talk about home renovations and where do you stay while you are fixing your house. That and more on this episode of the Handyman Hotline. Roll the intro!
Mercury, Mercury Stardust. She's a beacon of hope in the darkest night. Mercury, Mercury Stardust. She'll teach you how to make it all alright.
Hey guys, gals, and non-binary pals, thank you for coming back to the Handyman Hotline. And today we have so much to talk about replacing various things in your home. And I have so much to talk about because I just had to replace my gas furnace in my house. And I, for those who do not know, I just got a new home, my very first house ever. And I got that in June with my spouse, Zizi. And I was so excited, but boy, you know, in retrospect, 6 months later, I gotta tell you, you even as a professional, you don't really know what you're getting yourself into. And one of the very first things that our realtor told me to think about was how the furnace was 25 years old, and we were going to need to address that at some point. And then I said, oh, no, we will get through the winter. Why would I jinx myself and make myself spend $5,000 on a new furnace? I was so determined to fix this thing. My spouse, I was going to Colorado for a whole weekend, and I told my spouse, hey, you know, I'm going to turn on this, and I'm going to make sure it runs before I leave, because it's going to get a little cold, and I want to make sure you're warm when I'm gone. And I did that, and it worked. I want to clarify that the furnace worked one last time. And I was so happy. I was like, ha-ha, everyone, eat your heart out. I'm going to get through this winter. And then I went to Colorado, and as I was out there, my spouse gives me a call and said, hey, the furnace isn't working. I've tried all the things you told me to do. Nothing's working. I changed the battery in the thermostat. You know, checked the thermostat. Nothing's working. Flipped it on and off. I don't know where to start. And I said, you know what? You're probably good. The temperature isn't bad yet. This is back in October. And I said, I will fix it. Those are the last words that I ever said. I will fix it. And I promise. Oh, boy, don't do this. I promise that I will take care of it and save us money. Now, here's the thing. In retrospect, didn't save any money at all. I spent way more than I saved. I bought so many specialty parts. Just so determined because I'm the trans handyman. I know I can make this happen. And honestly, I was in the right direction, but I missed the most glaring thing. So the way the HVACs work, right, is that you are having a whole system that is kind of set up where it's going to bring air in, you're going to heat that air up, and you're going to push it back through your house. You have various mechanics in it, from your pressure switch, your gas valve, your inducer, and your igniter and your flame sensor that are all kind of working together and communicating with each other through something called a control board. With all of that, there's various parts that can go wrong. Most control boards will have a little indication light. So when you take off the actual cover, you can look at the cover and it will usually tell you if this blinks four times, then this is the problem. If this blinks and holds for 3 seconds, this is the problem. If this sings the entire Defying Gravity from Wicked, this is your problem. Sorry, I just saw that this past weekend. If you see this or that, this is what your problem is. Now, here's the thing. Some older models, especially ones from 25 years ago, do not have that type of control board. So I went into this completely blind. I had no idea what was wrong with it. That should have been the moment that I said, I'm going to put down my wrench and I'm going to call a professional, because there's no way with my limited HVAC knowledge, as someone who has a certification in it but doesn't use it, right? I never did an HVAC job. I only ever had the certification and then did maintenance with it, where I would replace the inducer, maybe blow a hose here or there, replace the presser switch. Easy stuff. I never had to, like, really figure it out. But I was determined because I wrote a book on this. So I was so overly determined. And I put everything I got into that. So the first thing I did was I looked at it and I said, okay, I'm going to look at the thing that makes the gosh darn flame, the igniter. And I bet you it's bad. I mean, it's 25 years old. It has to be bad. So I opened up the chamber. I went in there, unscrewed everything, took the igniter off, and I looked at the igniter. And I saw something that made me think it's definitely broken because it was missing. It was gone. It was absolutely gone. Okay? Like, the actual igniter part was just all broken up and a piece of it was left. And it's like, see, that's it. That's such an obvious thing that should be the problem. I call up one place after another place, and no one has it. No one has this part. And I'm like, gosh darn it, what do I do? And then I was like, just on a whim, I decided to put the model of this igniter on Amazon. And I said, you know, who knows? Maybe it's on Amazon. And it was on Amazon. And I got a specialty order, got it 3 days later. I put everything back in. I was so excited. I had everything hooked up. I had the pressure switch going and everything. I was just, I felt like I was a Wizard of Oz. I watched Wicked this weekend, and all my references for this episode will be related to that. Get over it. But that being said, I was Jeff Goldblum and having a great time. And I was like, aha, magic. I put everything back together, overly confident. And flipped that switch, and nothing. No hot air, nothing, not even a moment. And then I was like, okay, I missed something. Maybe it wasn't the flame sensor and igniter. Maybe there's something else. And here's the thing. More than one thing could be wrong is what's going through my head. There could be multiple things that are wrong. Okay, it's got to be the pressure switch. The pressure switch is basically this thing that communicates with your gas valve and communicates with your flame sensor, and it basically takes in gas when it senses a flame in there. It takes in a gas and it sucks it up. But when it doesn't, when it's like, hey, this is probably a bad idea, it doesn't actually open up and let any gas go into the chamber where all the fire is. I was like, that must be it, because it must not be getting a flame or anything. I'm not seeing a flame in there. There's no flame in the little window thing. So there must be the pressure switch. I looked everywhere. I called up a supply store. They said they had it. I waited 3 or 4 days. And then all of a sudden I checked the website and it said it was back ordered until January, which from the time of this recording is 2 months away. And I thought, hey, okay, well, I need to cancel that order, and I need to maybe look for something else. So I decided to put it into Amazon, and it was on Amazon, and I got it 2 days later. What I found out is that it's surprising the things that are actually on Amazon now, and I could not find it at anywhere else, a supply store. It would have taken me months anywhere else, but Amazon, I had it in 2 days. So I put in this part. And I was like, okay, this is it. Flip it on. Nothing worked. So now I called up my chosen dad. Now, my chosen dad, his name is John. He's one of the sweetest men I've ever met in my entire life. He is the father of my best friend from college that tragically passed away in a biking accident. And John and I stayed in touch for years. And this past year, he came over to my house to help me fix my roof and to reshingle it. And here's the thing. When you reshingle a house with somebody, they are, this is your life now. This is the person you will die with. When you reshingle a house, it is an overwhelming, terrible experience sometimes. And I was so overwhelmed by everything that I confessed that I was like, John, I feel like this is such a big job. There's 5 layers of shingles. You know, I underestimated how difficult this will be. And John showed up almost every day for 2 weeks. And we would work on it whenever we could, a couple hours here and there. And he was such a sweet man. So I text him and I said, hey, John, I'm kind of lost here. I just need someone to bounce ideas off. John comes over, who owns a couple properties. You know, he's a person who knows a lot of stuff. He's pretty handy. We're both pretty handy. So we stood there and we walked for an hour and a half. John and I were having what I would call a fun time with root beer, because neither of us drink. And we talked and talked and talked, and we came to the conclusion that it had a bad brain. That must be the control board. It must not be communicating with the presser valve, which isn't communicating with the flame sensor, which is why the inducer is running 24/7 and won't stop. It must be the control board. That's the culprit. So we looked at the part number. We went and we found the exact part number on Amazon. And we ordered it from Amazon. And I got it a week later, and we basically had to take all the wires off and monkey see, monkey do, essentially. We just took one wire off at a time and made sure they went exactly where they were supposed to be. And I was really confident that this was going to be the one. I flipped it on. Did nothing. And when I looked at Pa, when I looked at John, he looked back and said, well, I'm running out of ideas. And the only other option we really could do was replace the gas valve. Now, I didn't want to do that because out of all the things we bought, we had a igniter, which is like $50, presser switch, $70, control board, $50. The gas valve, which is where the gas goes in, and it's basically this device that will tell the gas it can come through. It is basically that the head honcho of the Emerald City. And he's very much like, no, you cannot be here. That's what the gas valve is. It is that jerk from the Emerald City. And eventually we're like, okay, we just got to get that. But it's $450. And I looked everywhere online and I came to the conclusion that I could find it on Amazon, and I bought it on Amazon. I got it 3 days later and I put it in. And here's the thing, working with gas is always scary. So we turned off everything and we were really cautious. But again, I called up Dad and I was like, hey, I actually don't want to do this alone. I want to make sure that I don't accidentally mess something up. So you want to come over and kind of help me? And here's the thing. Dad is getting older. He's not as strong as he used to be. I've been on T-blockers for 5 years. I can't open a jar of pickles anymore. So Dad and I were just cranking away and getting that gas bell off. And we got it off and we were so happy without breaking anything. And then we put it back on. We put a new one on. We put the plumber's putty on it. And we did all the things, and we put stuff on it. And we hooked everything back up. We looked at the photos. You always take photos when you take things apart, because it makes your life a lot easier later on, especially if this whole process takes you 45 days. And every time you buy a new part, your partner or your spouse threatens divorce. And there was multiple times where I would look at ZZ and I would be like, oh, it's only 4 days. And Z would be like, all right, go ahead, buy that. And then when I got to the gas valve, ZZ was like, if you do this, if you buy that gas valve and it's not this gas valve, I'm going to kill you. And it wasn't the gas valve. And I somehow survived that attempted murder. And then I just told Z, I'll call up them. I'll call them up and I'll get them here. And that's what I did. I called up a professional and I called them up. And honestly, it was such a terrible experience. We were up back, we were up against the wall. This was like right before Thanksgiving. And We needed at this much of it, 45 days without any heat in the house. ZZ has EDS, and they're really prone to, when they get cold or overheated, things don't go well because they also have POTS. And it was not a fun time. I kept on, like, worrying about Z when I wasn't around. So I was like, I got to just do something at this point. My pride was getting the best of me. So I called them up. They came over. And right away, this guy was so rude to me. I will never understand when contractors are rude to a client right out of the gate. I will never understand that. I'm paying him just to show up, right? This is not him doing the whole full job. He's auditioning for me. He's supposed to give me a diagnosis, right? So he comes up and I tell him, as another fellow professional, someone who wrote a book on this, right? Like, I may not have fixed this problem, but I knew what I was doing, right? I told him I had everything written out for him and what part numbers I switched everything with. And I told him I did this, 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 and this. He laughed in my face and said, "You made it worse." And 3 seconds later, he figured out it was a heat exchanger. And that's what pissed me off the most, is that everything I did literally had no connection with what he ended up finding, which was a heat exchanger. And the heat exchanger is basically the thing you don't want to break in your furnace. The heat exchanger is the most expensive piece of the entire furnace. And because it was 25 years old, there was cracks. And when you are having a heat exchanger, you also have carbon monoxide that's involved. So he went outside where the exhaust was, and he said instantly he could see the meter just shoot right up. It was definitely going on. In retrospect, this is what I wish I would have done. I wish that from the very beginning that I would have gotten my carbon monoxide tester, my just a regular one you have hanging up, take it down from the ceiling, go outside, make sure it's on, and then just see it. Now, that isn't the best solution, right? But it was such a high amount of carbon monoxide, I should have known. I should have known. And it upset me so much that he was a rude jerk to me. But also, I did not want to go another day without having this addressed. And he told me that I could order this or do this, but it would take 2 weeks. Or I could get a two-phase furnace, which is much better, much quieter, and much more powerful. Which is only $400 or $500 more, and he would do it that Saturday for me, and it would only cost me an extra $150 for them to do that Saturday. So I was like, "This is 2 days from now, let's just do it." But I did have the confidence to say I would like another technician to do it, and it worked out. The other technician was fine, kind of the same kind of guy, just different shape. You know, same attitude. I did not leave him a great review. And I was still upset. Like, it's been 2 weeks and I'm still pretty upset about it. And I think what makes me mad about it, all of it, is that when we're talking about furnaces especially, like, I have a certification. I know what I'm doing to some extent, right? I have the confidence. And the only conclusion I can come down to is that when someone comes and diagnoses stuff in your house, especially in this instance, he was getting paid by the hour. And I really feel like his steps, his normal way that he diagnoses stuff, got interrupted. And he was frustrated by that interruption of how he proceeds. And he wanted to be able to do his own check by check by check. And he went on to tell me later on, he felt like, oh, hey, you know, you could have messed something up. And I said, I didn't, and I know I did it. And this is why I know I didn't mess up. Before we got everything back up, before we put everything back together, he noticed that this little reset button was never reset. And that pisses me off just saying it out loud. There's a reset button that was on the side of my chamber, and I missed it. I was so focused on all these other pieces, I missed this tiny little thing. So all he had to do was flip it. He had to push it. And when he ran it, and all that carbon dioxide was going outside, I saw the flame. I saw the flame in that chamber, and I knew I fixed it. I fixed the damn problem. The only problem was there was more than one. So I will take that to the goddamn grave that I fixed that problem, and I'm confident the next time that I do a furnace, I will have more of an understanding of what to watch out for. But I think this is a lesson to contractors and they're having a little bit of empathy, having a little bit of kindness, having a little bit of care and bedside manner generally matters. And I hate to, you know, toot this horn, but you never know who's an online influencer. And if I really like you, maybe I give you a great review and you get a bunch of kickback from it. I mean, hell, my dentist gets so many calls because of my brand new teeth. He gets so many referrals because of that. It's just sad. You never really know who you're interacting with. And I really felt like they saw me. They took a look at me. They had an impression of who I was and made a snap judgment. And that's how they treated me. And even as a professional, that happens. But all that being said, it's fixed now. I'm very happy with it. I'm obsessed with the fact that I have something brand new in my house that has a warranty on it. It's the only thing in my house that has a warranty right now. And I'm so happy about that. Everything else is so gosh darn old. I feel like I have the original air conditioner from 1901. This air conditioner, when you flip it on, it's just like, it just sounds like it's having a seizure every time. But all of that being said, this episode is all about replacing stuff. And I replaced so much in this furnace that we ended up just throwing out. But now I have extra parts. Yeah, you never know when you're going to need a very specific part for a very specific old model of a furnace. I don't like throwing things away, okay? But all that being said, let's get to the first question of the day. Finally.
Hi, Mercury. The wife and I are big fans of your content and love watching your supportive and informative videos. We're looking into installing a humidifier in our home, but before we bite the bullet, we were wondering if you have any how-to videos or advice, especially with the electrical work for it and its control panel.
Now, I feel like I kind of showed my full hand right out of the gate, where I basically told you I didn't know what I was doing. So now I need to earn back my credibility. I will tell you right now, you know, humidifiers in your HVAC systems, for those who don't know, a humidifier is often, but not always, hooked up to your HVAC system, and it will basically have a little switch to let you kind of gauge how much humidity you can have in your house. And it has like a little vent system that you can close off, so when you're not using it in the summer or whatnot. And all that is pretty straightforward. It makes a lot of sense. For those who don't know fully what a humidifier is, basically just puts moisture in your air. It prevents things from getting overly dry. And if you've ever lived in an apartment, you probably don't have the best humidity system. For an example, if you ever lived in an apartment and in the winter, everything feels like a static shock. If you feel like you're overly dry and your allergy is getting worse and stuff, you probably don't have a humidifier in your house. Or it's not turned up to the right gauges, because that's what a humidifier in your home will prevent. It will prevent you from getting a whole bunch of static shocks. It will prevent you from getting overly dry. Often it would help you prevent colds and flus and stuff like that too. Like during COVID, people were talking about, make sure you clean your humidifier and make sure you change the filter in your HVAC system and et cetera. You were hearing a lot of that stuff during the height of the pandemic days. The humidifier should be around, like you should have around 30 to 50% humidity in your home. Now, if it dips below that, then that's when you start having a problem, right? You don't want it to go below 30%, really. That's when it kind of redlines. So when we're talking about this, kind of having that knowledge is really good. Like I have a dehumidifier that is constantly running in my basement, and it kind of lets me know what my basement's always at. You know, and we have a dehumidifier in the bathroom because we don't have a proper exhaust system in our bathroom yet to prevent mold and such. So that also tells me where I'm at for the humidity in the air. And you can also get gauges that can go in the wall and let you know with the humidity in the air if you really care a lot about it. And if you're in an older home, you might want to care a lot about it, because if you're living in an older home, we're talking like, you know, in the 1870s, like the situation we're talking about. Like if we're in these older homes, there's a very good chance you don't have proper ventilation throughout the house. And there's a very good chance that at least somewhere in your house, you have too much humidity or not enough humidity. And if you have too much humidity, this is when you breed mold. This is where you're breeding a lot of problems, and you can cause a lot of bad things happening. If there's a minor problem and then you put a lot of humidity in that way, it will be a big problem. So that's kind of what you want to watch out for. And I really like that they're specifically thinking about this stuff. I don't have a whole lot of tips and tricks when we're talking about the ins and outs of a humidifier specifically, what to watch out for and etc. The way that I look at this, especially after the experience I just described, I'm very much of the mindset, pay someone to do it right now. Just pay it. My God, is a pain in the butt when you mess it up. And I would say, too, when you're talking about the control board and stuff, just never be afraid of Sharpie on your vents and on your ductwork. And what I mean by that is, don't be afraid to put arrows or what direction the air is going in your ductwork. Don't be afraid to put, on my ductwork, literally I labeled it winter, and I pointed in what direction it was going into, and then I labeled another section outtake, and then there's another section that's called summer. And all of that kind of helps me keep track so I don't forget or mistake what vents I'm supposed to open or close, or, you know, what I should be mindful of. Like, I have two ductwork that are right next to each other that can be really hard to make out sometimes. I gotta like trace my steps every time. So I just marked it which one was going in and which one was going out. Super, super easy. Never be afraid of that kind of stuff. I think when it comes to those things, super fundamentally makes your life a lot easier. If you're doing this work yourself, I cannot stress enough that even though you're probably dealing with lower voltage, I think you are anyways with this, understand that if you're dealing with lower voltage, you can still mess things up, especially when we're talking about thermostats and humidifier stats. Humidistats are basically the same thing as a thermostat. It just controls your humidifier. It's sometimes a remote control. Mine is literally this tiny little thing that sits right up close to my ceiling in the basement, and it just adjusts. It's very simple. It's 1 through 5 is all mine is. And yours might be different if it's a newer model. Again, mine's from 30 years ago, so it's going to be kind of a bigger problem. But essentially, that is what we're talking about, is making sure that we're not going to accidentally blow a fuse or cause a problem because we didn't think about the most basic stuff. Sometimes when we think about this stuff, we just miss those things. So turn off all the power, make sure you do that. And often there's a lot of stuff online too that's step by step. If you're dealing with newer stuff, you've got a newer HVAC, if you have a newer humidifier, you should be able to find stuff that's going to relate to that. Is when you're dealing with the older stuff, it really comes touch and go. You might find something online, but you might not. Really be careful and read the manual. As someone who doesn't read the manuals enough, read the manual. Because when we're dealing with this kind of equipment, there's always little things for every make and model. And it might be a little bit different from one model to another model. And you don't want to miss anything like that. And I'm realizing as I'm talking about this, just to make sure people understand how this works, is that there's a hose that's connected up to the humidifier that is connected to your HVAC. And this hose is essentially where the water comes into, and the HVAC goes into the same pool that your humidifier uses, and that will pull the water, and then that will use the water to be able to turn into vapor into your house. So that's essentially what happens. A humidifier is hooked up typically to your house water, and then it kind of runs through your full system. So you have gas, typically, like in my case, I have my gas furnace. You might not have a gas furnace. You might have a different kind of furnace. But a gas furnace, water, and air is all connected at one unit. You know, not to mention you have a hot water heater probably right there too. So you have this whole little connected thing that is all working together. And that's what it makes it difficult to diagnose things when you got so many moving parts and you got so many fundamentally very important things in your house, especially when you're dealing with gas. So that is what I would say. This is my full takeaway from it, that I would not mess around with it. I would be overly cautious. Make sure you hire a professional if you can afford it. Take every precaution you can. And really also, I'm really happy you're getting a humidifier, especially in an older home. If you're in an older home that predates 1950, you might not have a humidifier. I would highly encourage you to get one. So, yeah, good old-fashioned Merc Jerk answering the questions left and right today. Let's go on to the second question of the day.
Hello, Mercury. My name is Ari. My pronouns are they, him. My question is about a sink issue that I'm having. The nozzle that I have for the sprayer on my sink is not working for my hot water. And I could use some advice as to what to do so that it is actually working. Thank you for all you do. And I look forward to hearing from you soon.
I am so excited about this one because this is one of the few how-to videos that I have on YouTube. I have a how to replace a sink sprayer hose. Now, technically, this is not that. It's a little bit different. We're talking about the sprayer head is probably what the problem is. But essentially, this is what we're looking at. You have the, I think from what you're describing, you don't have a faucet that is also a sprayer. I think you have a separate sprayer from what you're describing because you didn't mention the water not working when you were turning hot and water on otherwise. So I think from the way you described it, we're talking about the separate standalone sprayers. Now, typically, those sprayer heads, they have a smaller opening in the hose itself, and they can catch a lot of debris. We're talking like a lot of lime buildup will do it. Sometimes, you know, things internally will go bad and get stuck or something there. Various things can get lodged up in there that's going to make that sprayer not do its job properly. The good news is you can get a sprayer head for like under $10. And this is a pretty, like, you could probably do this under 5 minutes if you have a little bit of handiness experience. Otherwise, maybe 20 minutes, because it might take a little bit to, like, putz around with it and maybe get the right things to come off. But this is what I would do. I would like to be overly cautious, okay? I'm going to tell you, like, kind of two different ways to do this. First of all, I would just turn off the water. You're not really going to have that concerned. Just turn off the water. Be overly cautious. And then take off the head itself with your good old-fashioned groove joint pliers. Right, or channel locks, we might call it, and make sure that comes right off. Once that comes off, then we're looking at like a C-clip that is going to be holding stuff in. So we're looking at a rubber washer and a C-clip that need to come off. And then once you get those two things off, and a C-clip just is this metal thing that kind of clips on to hold everything together. So once you get that off with a knife will do it. I heard someone earlier talk about that, how they use a can opener off their switchblade on their knife to kind of pry it off. That's a great idea because the way that they're clipped, there's one side of the C clamp or C clip that is open and the other side is all metal. So it's really easy to snap off when you have something like that. And then once you get that all apart, then it's just as easy as just putting the new head on there. Make sure that when you're looking for the sprayer head and a new replacement, that we're matching the size of it. There may be various sizes that you want to think about. Make sure that you're measuring things. Make sure you're being mindful of that. Nothing's worse than when you travel all the way to the hardware store and you realize that you were off by like one number or you were just slightly wrong. That always drives me bonkers. And so that's what I would do. Put it all together and then turn the water back on. And then, boom, you should be ready to go. Now, if you want to go the extra mile here, I would also record yourself doing this just because there isn't a whole lot of steps here, but I could totally see someone getting a little bit confused when you're taking all the hosing stuff off and forgetting a clip or forgetting the washer. If the washer, by the way, if the rubber washer looks damaged, if it looks like there's parts missing, because it's usually like a tiny little rubber washer, if that's the case, that actually might have been what lodged in there sometimes. I will then replace that washer too. Sometimes the new ones will come with stuff like that. And if it doesn't, then just replace what you with what you got. You can get a washer collection from your good old-fashioned hardware store. I have a big old box of washers that I will never use. it's more like an ornament in my shop right now. But I have them. And I like to have that kind of stuff just in case. I don't like to have to go to the hardware store all the time. But once you do all that, and if it still is not working, if it isn't at the very tip of it, like if we're talking that the head itself isn't where the clog was, if a clog was in the hose, then we're talking about going under the sink, turning off the sink, turning off the water to everything, just turning off the valve, and then disconnecting everything, and just running it back through. Those sprayers are really straightforward. They're actually really easy to get out and on. Once you disconnect stuff and you pull it out, you can just put a new one in and hook it back up and turn the water back on. That's as simple as that. Very straightforward. The only hitch is that a lot of times those hoses will have like a connector head that connects weird. When I was doing mine a couple years ago at my apartment that I used to live at, there was a specialized clip that took me an hour to figure out how to get. And it's in the video that I put on YouTube, but essentially it's just me pushing down this clip and turning it right. And that's all it was. But it looked so confusing and it took me a while to figure it out. So you may have a different kind of connector. It may be a little bit of a frustrating experience. But once you get all that, you should be good. And you can get a hose assembly at a hardware store for a pretty affordable price. So that shouldn't be too bad for you. So those are your two fixes. That should be it. So I would go for the sprayer head first. I would, 9 times out of 10, it's the sprayer head, especially with what you're describing with those like cheaper sprayer heads probably that are standalone. You know, things in there are so small, and I just wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. But this is very manageable. This is very manageable. You'll be able to do this. And let me know how it goes. I totally want to hear it. And speaking of things that I want to hear about, I want to hear about our wonderful sponsor today for this podcast. And that sponsor's name is Mercury Stardust. She's called the Trans Handyman. She wrote a book called A Safe and Sound, A Renter's Friendly Guide to Home Repair. And boy, does that dumb lady need money. She would love your money. She has hats. She has shirts. She has stickers that her spouse designed. She has so many wonderful things on her website, including a Patreon. And you can go to the Patreon and you can become a subscriber to that and our Substack and find out more about our wonderful company that we run here at Mercury Stardust Media and all the things that we're up to. But also, if you want to ask me a question directly, the Handyman Hotline is a functional hotline now where you're not just leaving a message and maybe I'll talk about it on the podcast. You are leaving a video call and I can return the video call to you now. It's a little bit phone taggy. They're working on that system to make it a little bit more straightforward. But for $1.99 right now, as of making this podcast, it's $1.99 a minute. To compensate me for my time. But none of my calls that I have had are over 15 minutes. So I think it's pretty valuable in that way. And if you're someone who's like, I'm handy, but I just need someone to spitball ideas off of, it's like the perfect thing for you because I love that kind of stuff. I love spitballing with people and coming up with ideas with people. If you're someone who's like, I need to know where to start with a renovation. I just got a house, or I'm nervous about my maintenance technician at my apartment, or anything around those lines, or even questions about being a trans person in America, or any questions about being a parent to a trans kid, or any questions you may have around those lines, I'll be more than happy to take your call and to talk with you. I love doing this. I am having the most fun talking to all of you. So please feel free to call the wonderful trans handyman, who is definitely not me, because self-promotion is shameful. That being said, let's listen to the final third question of the day.
Hi, Mercury. My sister and I grew up with a trans mom, and she has a trans child, my niece, who's almost 15. We've started looking into renovating her house so I can move in. We did both watch your video on contractor red flags, so we know how to be cautious, but I was wondering if you had any other tips or recommendations. My sister is also really worried about how we'll be able to afford to live somewhere else while the house is being renovated. It's a really big project, this house. I have a place to stay, and I could keep my niece, but I don't have room for my sister or her husband, and none of her friends really have the space either. My sister also has two cats and a dog. Do you have any recommendations or experiences with keeping families together during renovations, or any ideas on the most affordable way to do that?
This is such a unique and great question. When I saw this one come in here at the studio, we got so excited. But this is what I'm going to tell you right out of the gate. First of all, Neef is the most adorable gender-neutral way to describe them person. I've heard Neef a couple times, but boy, is that I just love that. So Neef, if you're looking for a gender-neutral way to talk about your siblings' children, I think I got that right. But all of that being said, we're talking about home renovations. And where do you go with your family when you're doing these said renovations? Now, it really depends on what kind of renovations we're talking about. This sounds like a complete flipping overhaul, right? Which is going to definitely be a factor here. But let's just say this is a renovation where you can be more specific. Like, oh, this is a kitchen. This is the basement. This is the attic kind of thing. Then we're talking about like really working that around your schedule and really working that around how you're living your life, right? Like if you tell the contractor that you're like, hey, I work during this time or I do this. If you work from home, it makes this way harder. But if you work off of your home and you work at a factory or something, then we're talking that you're away from the house from 8 to 10 hours a day. In that instance, then you're able to kind of get a good work day out of the contractors. I know when I was growing up, we had someone who was redoing our basement. And when we had someone who come over and do that, we essentially just dealt with them working when we were in the house. You know, we would have noise-canceling headphones on. Back in the day, we didn't have those necessarily. We had those big radio ones that wasn't hooked up to anything, but it was like a radio headphone. You just play the radio really loud in your ears, which is probably why I'm partially deaf in my left ear. But all that being said, that is what I would be thinking about if you're starting this process. Now, when we're going farther into this, like in the situation we have here, it doesn't really sound like you can really have them work around you. If you could, you probably would be doing that, right? But it comes down to planning and trying to find if there's breaks in there. If you're someone on a tight budget, remember these renovations can be 4 to 6 months, sometimes a year. Sometimes these are long renovations. And we're going to be talking about apartments and hotels and any temporary living at all. We're going to be talking about that in a second here. But before we get to that, you might want to build in breaks here. You definitely want to declutter your house so it's easier to get the stuff that will save time for the contractors and for yourself. But when we're dealing with this specifically, I want you to kind of think about like, okay, I'm going to be at the hotel for 2 weeks and then I'm going to be at the house for a week. And that's going to save you money, and maybe the contractor can work on specific things within that time that's more not invasive. So that's kind of how you can get around it. It's a lot of back and forth. It's a living gosh darn nightmare. If this is ripping your house down to the boards and you're going frame to frame with this darn thing, You don't really have that luxury. And I think that's kind of the case that you're in right now. You're not going to have that luxury. So I'm going to bring up some ideas that we have done with various people through my years of doing this work, but also my family has done. Now, the very first one I'm going to say right out of the gate is rent a camper. Rent a camper or rent a tent. And that is probably not everyone's favorite answer, but I will tell you what, that's what my uncle did, and that's what a lot of my clients have done over the years. When I've known that they've done things, they've just gotten a camper from a family that they know, and they parked right outside of their house if they were legally allowed to, depending on where you live. And that's what they did, right, for however long, right? And if they needed a shower, you know, you always have Planet Fitness is a way to do it. Honestly, this is a lot of, like, how people travel, you know, like, when people are, you know, van lifers, this is kind of a route that people go. They have a Planet Fitness membership, and they kind of go that route. We had an outhouse at my house, right? Like, we had a porta potty that we got out there, and we could use, too. So there's various routes. I think that is, like, kind of one of the most inexpensive ways. If we're talking about, like, camping on your property, essentially. But if that is still not possible, if we're talking like there's just so many logistics problems with that, and it's just a living nightmare with that, then the next step up is like, okay, you still need to save money. So if you don't have the friends and family that you can reach out to do this, how do you make this possible? And this is when I kind of started getting creative. I started thinking about like, well, okay, well, let's look at this way. What is the best kind of tenant? The best kind of tenant is someone who treats their property well, right? I think a landlord out there, especially landlords that might be like independent landlords, or ones that only have three or four properties, ones that, you know, have a duplex and they live on one side of the duplex and are renting on the other side of the duplex, those kind of situations, you may find something that you can work out something with a landlord. And if it's only for 6 months, maybe there's something that they can do within that time frame. It's still going to be costly, but I think all the other options I have are going to be costly. You know, unfortunately, I couldn't find any grants. I couldn't find any, like, things that you could apply for that would make this easier. Other than, you know, having some friends chip in for a GoFundMe and trying to do something like that, I couldn't think of anything else that would fundamentally make this more possible financially. But I would say if you get a sympathetic landlord, and I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but again, like my chosen pa is a landlord. I don't really think of him as a landlord. John doesn't come off that way at all. You know, he's always so mindful of stuff, and he's always asking me ethical questions and how to do stuff. And he only has three tenants. So I don't think of him that way, but that's kind of the kind of person you're looking for. You're looking for a John. And not a place where you go poop, like an actual person named John. And you hopefully you can find someone who will be sympathetic to that and understand, maybe do a little bit of a discount. Maybe you can do a trade of some kind. I know that, like, with John and a few other people that I've known through the years, they've done trades with people where they're like, hey, I'll fix things up in your house, or I will do this, and I'll get a little bit of that on the side. Or if they are someone that has had real bad experiences with tenants, and they kind of need a rebound, and they need something more consistent, and you need to have a reliable tenant while they're through an adjustment period or something, that might be another one too. And sometimes there's gaps for landlords who are selling property. There could be a gap of time where someone moved out and now they have 6 months while they're trying to sell it. There may be an opportunity to figure that out with a landlord. You know, again, these are kind of like pie in the sky hopes, but man, you could find some weird shit on Craigslist. And, you know, Facebook Marketplace is so popular these days. Maybe if you're on, boy, what is that website called that's a neighborhood website that people are so into now?
Nextdoor.
Nextdoor! Wow, the voice of God came in here. That those kind of things could pan out. You could get lucky and find someone who could help you. There's another option, though. There's actually several more options, but the one that's on the top of my list here is I said a hotel, but specifically a Hotel Hilton. Hilton's in certain necks of the woods. I found this out last year when we were on our national book tour, that Hilton has like long-term stay things going on. So like you might be able to get a discount through them the longer you stay. And you might want to think about that, you know, because you'll get a whole apartment basically with a Hilton, but it's much more short term than, say, a lease that might, in a lot of the neck of the woods, you can't get a lease for less than a year now. There, some places are, it's like a 2-year lease at times now. It's gotten really hard for renters across the country. So I will say that if you have a Hotel Hilton that is like an Inwood or a long-term, a longer temporary time hotel, there's various brands out there that might do it. But I would hit them up and see if you can find out something. If you have like, oh, this is going to be 3 months, they may be more prone to it. And the last one I'm going to say is an Airbnb. Now, this is another situation where you may be able to work out a deal with the person directly and see if there's something that you can do here. You know, again, Airbnb folks are folks who've done renovations more times than not, and they're folks who understand these kind of things. They may be more prone to talk about this. They may be more willing to speak than the other ones did. But that would be where I would start here. I would go that route. Now, wanting to keep everyone together is so difficult and is so cost. Like, if you can find a place that's big enough and keep everyone together, that is great. Like, you know, God forbid that we do a single bedroom apartment, but boy, is that the cheapest route in a lot of ways. You know, so I would think about that, build that into the budget if possible. It sounds like there's quite a few of you, so maybe you can all chip in and make this work. But, you know, it isn't the funnest thing in the world. So when we're dealing with renovations themselves, the first thing I want to tell you is plan, and this is a part of the plan. Where you stay and how you're going to live while you're going through this needs to be a part of the plan. If you're in a house where you can do things and section it off, and then you can use zip doors are these plastic doors that go over your door frame and just has a zipper down, up and down, or sometimes they have magnetic strips on them too. So those plastic doors can keep that, the, you know, your dust from coming in and various ways to do it. There's some cool routes that you can go where you're almost like you're in a spaceship where you go through one door and then you go through another door. You can do like vacuum suction areas like that too if you really want to. But if you're thinking about this, that's kind of where I would start. We want to plan, and this is a part of the plan. And then it's like working that budget out. Like once you kind of get an idea, then working that budget out, decluttering things is going to save you money. Getting rid of a bunch of stuff. As the world's like, I am really bad at getting rid of stuff. I'm really bad at it. I told myself I was going to get rid of all this stuff before I moved. And the other night I went down to my basement and I looked at all my stuff and I went, I don't want to get rid of any of this. I'm terrible. I am going to get rid of it. I made a promise to myself and my best friend, who is listening to this right now, who wants to look at my clothes and get rid of them for me. So essentially, though, that's what we're looking at. Decluttering is going to help. Make sure you get the proper permits ahead of time. That's going to slow you down if you didn't. So make sure the contractor pulls the permits and that we're thinking about those things before you're really doing everything and you put things in action, because there's nothing more annoying than when you have to pack everything up and move out of your own house, and then things get delayed for reasons that do not have to get delayed for, right? And that's bringing me to my last point here, is create a timeline and then be willing to throw the timeline out. There has never been a renovation I've ever been a part of or ever seen or ever heard of that's been on time the entire way through. Now, I've been on jobs where we've made up the time and we caught up and we were able to get almost within that time frame. But most of the time, you don't hit it. It's longer than you want it to, or you miraculously just sped right through that darn thing, and then I'm going to start wondering why you did. And then you got it done early. But most of the time, it's way more than you want. And contractors, especially ones that are doing full renovations, like a general contractor, a lot of times they will tell you a pie in the sky thing. They're going to say 3 months, and it's going to be 6 months. And I would always just err on the side of caution. Like, if you're able to, man, this might sound crazy. Maybe this is a wrong approach, but I would say if you're able to, I would try to keep in mind that your budget should be 30% more than it should be from the quote that they're saying with a timeline. So if they're saying it's going to be 3 months and you're budgeting everything together and it's like $15,000, I would say an extra 20% or extra 30% on top of that, I would want in my savings, ready to go, because shit's going to come up. I mean, how many times do we do this stuff and we are doing a full renovation and then we find out, oh, this is wrong. Oh my God. Hey, your furnace has a bad heat exchanger. Boy, we're going to need to fix that now too. And those things pop up from time to time. And especially with the situation you're describing with your house and all the things that are happening, there's probably going to be other things that are unforeseen that you're not seeing coming. And you want to be prepared for that. So never my favorite thing to talk about. You know, basically you're asking me, what is the cheapest way to do this and be able to keep my family together? And my response is, there is no cheap way. And you better be happy to get rid of your family. You know, like, there is no happy ending to that story. I hope you can find something and kind of find a route to go. But to be honest, if this was me and it was just me and I didn't have to worry about anyone else but me, I would do the camper. That's how I would do this. That would be the cheapest route. A, I want a camper anyways. And that would be the route to get go. You can rent campers for fairly affordable prices. But also you can find cheaper campers park it outside your house. And for like a couple thousand dollars, you can have a camper right there by your house and everything too. And I think that's a lot of perks to that. So yeah, that would be what I would say. I hope that that makes sense. I hope that that helps. And I hope that everything goes really well with the renovation. You know, today we talked a lot about replacing things and knowing what to replace and knowing when you need to call quits and call someone to replace it for you. We talked a lot about those things today. But I think it all comes down to one essential thing. And that is moving on from the old and being willing to embrace the new. I am 37 by the time that you're watching this or listening to this podcast. And I have to say, the older I get, the harder it is to let things go and to be open for new horizons. I just get so scared that with the time remaining in my life, I'm going to make a wrong decision and then I got to sit with it the rest of my life. You know, that's where I'm getting. The older I get, the more that is like weighing on me over and over and over again. But the reality is this, especially in all the situation we talk about today, all of these are things we have to address, from a furnace to a sprayer, right? The sprayer is the cheapest one out of this, but a sprayer just has to be replaced too. And then also doing major renovations and replacing your home with a temporary home in the meanwhile. Like, these are big decisions that can be hard to make sometimes and can be pretty stressful. But when it comes down to it, at the very end of the day, it's your decision to make. And often, the brightest moments in our life come from the biggest changes. So I hope you keep that in mind. And until next time, remember, you're worth the time it takes to learn a new skill. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Handy Mam Hotline. Mercury Stardust is the Handy Mam. And this episode was produced by me, Basil. Our theme song is written and performed by Rhodey Walker. You can find all of our back catalog of the Handy Mam Hotline on our Substack, where I'm also writing weekly update posts. So come check it out. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.